This is Mid-Morning on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Carrie Miller. This hour, how would you sacrifice if called to do it? If you listen closely to Barack Obama's victory speech on election night, you heard the word or the idea of sacrifice a half dozen times. The sacrifices made by Obama's opponent, John McCain, in his military service to the country. The sacrifices made by his campaign manager, David Plouffe, for a two-year cross-country slog. The sacrifices made by soldiers in Iraq and Afghanistan and of parents trying to figure out how to pay for their kids' doctor's visits and put them through college. And then President-elect turned straight to the American people and said this.
This victory alone is not the change we seek. It is only the chance for us to make that change. And that cannot happen if we go back to the way things were. It can't happen without you, without a new spirit of service, a new spirit of sacrifice.
Today, we're going to talk about the history of sacrifice in this country, the shape that it might take in individual lives, and the organizations that are ready to embrace what Barack Obama calls this new spirit of sacrifice. Our guests will join us in a moment, but I think the most interesting part of this conversation is going to be in hearing how you, our listeners, perceive this call to sacrifice. So what kind of a sacrifice could you make, would you be willing to make, for the common good? If you're a young person, I'd like to hear your ideas. Does it mean signing on with a national service organization? Does it mean looking around your own community and volunteering? Does it mean something else? I hope you'll share your ideas with us today. And if you're older, tell me what you think the president-elect means and how that might take shape in your life as well. So asking our listeners this morning as we begin our conversation, what kind of sacrifice would you be willing to make for the common good? If you're a young person, tell us what you've been thinking about as you've been listening to what Barack Obama has been saying on the campaign trail. If you're an older person, tell us just exactly what you think he means when he talks about this renewed spirit of sacrifice. 800-242-2828. If you're listening in the metro area, 651-227-6000. If you're online this morning, minnesotapublicradio.org, and click on Send a Question. So as you think about what this call to sacrifice means in your own life, 800-242-2828, 651-227-6000, and online at minnesotapublicradio.org, and click on Send a Question. To our guest this morning, Michael Brown is CEO of City Year, and he joins us this morning from Boston. Michael Brown, good to have you here.
It's great to be with you.
So Mark Leff is with us as well. He's an associate professor of history at the University of Illinois, and he's with us this morning from Urbana, Illinois. Mark, thank you for being with us.
Well, thank you, Carrie, and I'm looking forward to hearing from the listeners.
I am too, and the phones are already ringing, so we should have some good perspective here. What do you hear in the appeals that Barack Obama makes to sacrifice? I wonder if you hear him, you know, taking a page from other presidents who assume power in tumultuous times, like Lincoln and FDR, or do you hear a different kind of call?
You know, I certainly hear the comparison with both Lincoln. And by the way, this is 75 years ago today was Lincoln's Gettysburg Address.
Wow.
And what he called for with a new birth to freedom, I think that's one of Obama's themes. But the other one, and certainly is Franklin Roosevelt. That's been noted in latest Time magazine, for example, has Obama looking like Roosevelt with the upturned cigarette holder. Obama is quite explicit that he wants a different kind of national loyalty, one that actually involves participation, a sense that you can bring a different, make a difference.
Michael Brown, do you think when he talks about sacrifice, that necessarily is defined as giving something up? I mean, is that part of the equation, or what do you hear when you hear him talk about this?
I think it's a very large concept for active participation for citizenship. I think it goes to the very core of who President-elect Obama is with regards to his history with community organizing, which was really all about calling people to give up a little bit of their time, but to participate in something larger than themselves. And from that, get tremendous benefits for their community, but also really feel empowered through the process. And I think he has a very deep sense that America's problems can't really be solved by government alone, and that citizens are going to be needed.
But I get the... I'm sorry, go ahead.
And I think that's been a very big theme of his campaign, and I think he put out a very bold national service proposal a year ago. And I think that's going to be a big part of his presidency.
I want to talk about that proposal here in just a moment. I was going to say, I get the feeling that while he is talking about volunteerism, that he's also talking about something else. I mean, he says a new spirit of patriotism, a new spirit of responsibility. So how do you hear that, Michael?
Well, I think that's just completely across the board. It has to do with the civility in public life with regards to how we talk about our politics, mm-hmm. with regards to saying to young people, you got to stay in school and you got to turn off the TV, with regards to participation in our public life. I think there's a very strong core theory to President-elect Obama with regards to what it means to be an active citizen. And that includes some level of sacrifice and really looking out for other people.
And Professor Leff, I want to pick up on what Michael Brown
Mark,
has just...
By the way.
I'm sorry,
thanks.
Mark. You don't want to be called Professor?
No.
That's fine. First names are cool. Okay. So I want to pick up on something that Michael Brown just said,
yeah.
This idea, and Barack Obama first really hit the national stage talking about this in 2004 at the Boston Convention, where he talked about being your brother and your sister's
yep.
keeper. This sense that you are not just in this for yourself, but it strikes me that this is a delicate proposition because a president does not want to sound too critical or too scolding when they talk about this. Delicate line to walk?
No, I really think that you're zeroing in on what's important here. Sacrifice is not, by the way, just giving up something. The idea there for Obama is that you can have a sense that you can make a difference. That's what's really struck me about the entire result of the campaign is the fatalism that you just have to let things happen, that you watch the world go around and you don't try to make it turn. That's what Obama was trying to change, that sense that you are your brother's keeper, you are your sister's keeper, that you need to get involved. That involves both government, and it certainly involves a broader participation in what government's doing and the kinds of private efforts that Michael's involved in. And can I just make one comment here? Michael, I want to thank you for that. Your wonderful program. My daughter was in City Year several years ago.
Delighted to call her an alumni.
Yes, and it is. It's a terrific program.
Michael Brown is, we should say, CEO of City Year. We're going to talk about their goals and how they're embracing this new spirit of participation and civic engagement that President-elect Obama is talking about, but also this idea of sacrifice. How do you hear this in your own life? What kind of individual sacrifice have you been thinking about as you've heard President-elect Obama talking about this? And how about contributing, your idea of contributing to the common good? So Michael Brown, one of our guests to talk about this, Mark Leff, is also with us this morning, Associate Professor of History at the University of Illinois. We're talking also a bit about historical calls to sacrifice and how the American people responded to that in previous years. 800-242-2828 to join us, 651-227-6000. If you're a young person and you're listening to this show, I'd be very interested to hear how you've been thinking about this. Does this mean signing on with an organization like City Year? And if you're an older person, maybe you have some frame of reference here for other calls to sacrifice. You've heard this before. Tell me how you're thinking about it. To the phones, to Ray in Eagan. Hi, Ray. You're up first. Hi, Ray. You're there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, go ahead.
How are you?
Turn down your radio, will you, please?
Oh, it's down.
All right, good.
I
go
just,
ahead.
I just was in our conversation. I'm sorry about that.
All right, go ahead.
I appreciate the topic today, but I'd like to make the point that, you know, sacrifice starts from the top, and it's a lot of rhetoric and it's not very popular to ask the American public to sacrifice when they're already suffering. And a lot of the sacrifice needs to come from the top, and I think they need to lead by example. When Obama sacrifices his $1.6 million mansion in Hyde Park, I'll be willing to listen to him. I think the guy is totally in over his head. I think it's a popular notion that elected him that he's going to make some changes. And with his cabinet appointments, I don't see much.
So, Ray, you want to see an example of sacrifice by the people at the top of government and what, at the top of corporations as well?
At the top levels all across the board. I mean, when you're flying around in corporate jets and spending $450 or $500 million on campaigns and taking your jet to Hawaii, I'd like to see these guys do something a little different at the top levels. And you never see that. I think to get people to buy into this notion, you need to have someone leading by example.
Let me put your thoughts to Michael Brown first. Michael, what about that?
You know, I think that President-elect Obama's life has been clearly one dedicated to public service. And so I think he's created a lifetime example of that. I think the caller raises some interesting points, but I really think it's and there may be some issues with regards to tax cuts or rather tax cuts that aren't going to happen at the very top of the scale. In terms of service, we know that when you call on Americans, they will respond. And we've seen it through the AmeriCorps program. Over 500,000 Americans have participated in AmeriCorps. President-elect Obama is calling for an expansion of that program from 75,000 to 250,000 a year. That means at the end of a four-year term, 1 million Americans will have given a year of service. And I think they're ready to do that. I think they're sort of chomping at the bit to be called on to work on some of our nation's most pressing needs.
Mark Leff, I think, though, what we hear in Ray's comments here may be picking up on some of the cynicism that you hear about, let's say, the financial bailout. You know, headlines filled with news about bailout money going to companies who are still going to give out bonuses, to executives who are still flying out to resorts. I think there may be some cynicism there about this.
I understand that. Listen, we've been through a number of years where no matter how cynical you were, you couldn't really keep up. And in this case, the particular thing about sacrifice that Ray raised is expected. Sacrifice, that's fighting words. That's asking something of me at a time when things are going really wrong. Obama is a great example to me of exactly what Ray was talking about. He came out of Harvard Law with the ability to take a huge, high-paying top position. He instead went into community organizing. This is a spirit of public service that, yes, he's calling on us to make, too. That's always been crucial. It was in World War II when you called on workers to allow for a pay freeze. One of the things that Franklin Roosevelt did is he said, in order to make this seem reasonable, I'm going to limit all corporate salaries to $25,000 a year. Congress repealed that the next year, but that is what he did, $25,000 a year after taxes. And the reason he did it was exactly because of what Ray is talking about, that if you ask people to give something up for the broader interest, you want them to know that other people are sharing that kind of sacrifice and commitment. But otherwise, the important thing, I think, that Ray is pointing us toward is that we have a sense that it's not just other people who are rich people or privileged people who are benefiting from what we're doing. It's the broader nation. And I think that's what he's going to try to be in the process of convincing him of. It's a John Kennedy moment. It's that kind of sacrifice. It's ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. And that is not thought of as what I am giving up.
Right.
That is what I can do. That's fulfilling in itself.
Online here from Adam, here's an interesting way of making a sacrifice and a contribution. He says, what can I do for my country? In 2003, at the age of 77, I joined the Peace Corps, spending 2 years in Kyrgyzstan working with a public university. Adam, good to hear from you. Congratulations. That's a great idea.
Yeah,
to the phones, to Molly in St. Paul. Hi, Molly.
Hi.
Tell me how you've been thinking about this.
Well, I was thinking, you know, so many people are so busy. I mean, especially like in my family, people are working, we have small children, and they're strapped money, they're strapped time. They just don't have the time. And with the payback to all these companies for all of these, you know, bailouts and so forth, what if, you know, if you had a certain percentage of people, like if you had such a size company, a bigger size company, you were required by law to require your employees to donate 10 hours a month or even 5 hours a month per employee to some sort of common good cause, like volunteer in a school or something. It's part of your job requirement.
Right. The company makes that time available to you.
Right. The company says you have 5, 10, however many hours they make it, a month even, to donate to the community. You have to do it as part of your job. Therefore, people have the time. And the companies are giving something back, too, and they're required to do that.
You know, Michael Brown, I tried to get something like this going at the place I worked before, Minnesota Public Radio, and there was resistance. Businesses seemed to... there seems to be a little pushback from business about this. How do we get more corporate leaders interested in doing something like Molly's talking about, do you think?
I think it's a matter of inspiring them to see what it can do for their employees. I'm not sure that requiring things like this, I'm not a huge fan of requiring service, although I do think that in the grade school years, in the high school years, just like math and English are required, I think doing a period of service could be a very important part of civic development. We've seen companies such as the Timberland Company provide 40 hours of paid leave for every employee to do service. It's part of their path of service program. And it's essentially another week's vacation. So whatever number of weeks vacation, you also get a week's vacation to do service. And it's really easy to administer. And I think if you talk to the folks at Timberland, they see it as an employee benefit that attracts top talent to Timberland. And their whole idea is that you don't have to leave your values at the door when you walk in to be part of their company. So I think if companies can see it as an HR benefit, as part of the kind of culture they're building, and it only creates more loyal employees that really want to stay.
Maybe more of them will be inspired to do this once this begins. I think you mentioned the school district idea, and I know that's part of President-elect Obama's proposal for a national service plan. So he'd increase funding for AmeriCorps. He'd double the size of the Peace Corps by 2011. This is the plan. Create a tax credit for college students who volunteered 100 hours of service a year. And he is interested in creating this program for school districts where schools would set a goal of having students serve 50 hours of service a year in return for some additional federal funding. Why do you think it's so important that we get elementary and middle school and high school age kids out into the community for 50 hours of service a year? That seems like a lot.
Well, you know, what we do in our schools reflects what we value in our society, and certainly the ABCs are critical. But at the same time, the idea of starting early in one's life to understand that you're part of a larger society and you're connected, I actually think it can have a tremendous benefit with regards to young people staying in school, because there's something really empowering about realizing that even as a child, you have this power to affect other people's lives and that you're connected to community. So, and I think it's created that habits of the heart that America is famous for, that Tocqueville talked about. And so I would like to see it incorporated in a way, and I strongly support President-elect Obama's plan to do that in the schools.
Let me just be clear here. Mark, just one second. Michael Brown, your organization, City Year, now this is a year of service between high school and college. Is that right, primarily?
Well, it's or during college, take a year off,
okay,
or after college.
Okay.
17 to 24-year-olds, full-time for 1 year.
Mark, you were going to say what?
Yes, I just wanted to say that Obama isn't building this from nothing. There is the service learning idea is certainly important at universities now. The difference between even the students who are coming in to college now versus 20 years ago, you know, we're told this was an apolitical generation. Well, in fact, this was a generation that more and more have backgrounds in tutoring and working in old age homes. This is becoming more and more part of our culture. So I think that what Obama is doing is partly building on that kind of mindset. And by the way, it doesn't have to just be that kind of service. The number of young people who got involved in the recent political campaign is also another example of this sense that I should do something that goes beyond myself, that has an impact beyond myself. And there's a wide base for that already, and I think it's going to make a difference. I think we're going to see it make a difference.
You know, Mark, that really, your mentioning of how many young people were involved in the campaigns, either side, is really an argument for President Obama to move quickly, you know, before that spirit fades, right? Not to, if he can, not to take a year or 2 years to try to get this thing into action.
I agree. And it's not only quickly so that you get particular legislation now. The idea is to create a culture in which, just like the World War II culture of sacrifice, a culture in which that's valued, and a culture also of the empowerment that Michael was talking about. You know, if the idea can be, if we can elect a black president, or if we can, set in John Kennedy's terms, if we can send a man to the moon, then we can deal with our current national problems. That's part of what I think this idea of sacrifice, if you think of it more broadly, also involves. And I find it heartening. I find it heartening with my students to see this sense that actually, by participating, they can make a difference. It's in some ways the Barack Obama community organizing mentality that's worked, that's gotten more people feeling that they're involved and that they can make a difference.
To the phones, to Ashel in Minneapolis. Hi, Ashel. Thanks for waiting.
Thanks, Carrie. Mine is around sacrifice. I was particularly offended during the campaign when people picked on Joe Biden talking about taxes being, paying more taxes as patriotic. I'm 40. I can't. I'm too old to go to war. And I have been prepared mentally for quite a while to pay more taxes. And the fact that, you know, I don't have a second income, it's just me, I realize that this is additional money in the middle, as a middle class person, that I'm going to have to contribute to the society and hope that it's spent well. But to me, that's part of the sacrifice. You don't get to say, I want to participate in the infrastructure and the beauty of this country, but not be willing to make a contribution, a financial contribution, to maintain it. It's like a house. You have to take care of it. And I feel really strongly about that. And I don't know where this idea came from, that we should get more and more of our money and less in taxes. I mean, I don't get me wrong. I love to be paid, and I'd love to have more of my money, but I feel the responsibility of keep maintaining the country.
And Michael Brown, to add to that, from Lois in Cook, Minnesota, saying a similar thing to what Ashel is saying, we all want stuff, i.e. better roads. We need to make paying taxes a positive thing. We pay taxes, a sacrifice, and we do get things from the government. Michael Brown, does a lot of this depend on the way Barack Obama would frame this? I do want to note, though, that he was talking about a tax cut for the middle class, and I think throughout the campaign he was saying 95% of Americans, of taxpaying Americans, are going to get a tax cut. So there was not a lot of talk about this idea that paying more taxes is patriotic, and they really backed off of it after Joe Biden got some heat for what he said in an interview.
I think, you know, that has to do in some cases with you know, the nature of campaigns. But the caller's point with regards to taxes, I, you know, as citizens, in some ways, very little is asked of us. We're asked to pay our taxes and ideally to vote. One is mandatory and one is voluntary. When you do service, you connect to something much broader. And I think the more people that are involved in service in civic life, whether it's volunteering for a PTO or spending a year in full-time service or serving one's country in the military, I think what ends up happening is there becomes a lot more thoughtfulness with regards to things like taxes and what things are for. And citizens become much more engaged and, frankly, harder to sway demagogically on certain kind of issues, which doesn't mean they'd always be for higher taxes. They'd be for smart investments, and they would have strong opinions on how those things work. I've always thought that sort of national service writ large is kind of just the missing link to make a modern democracy work, to make us more engaged and more thoughtful. And one of the things that President-elect Obama has proposed in the legislation that you listed is a civic health index. Which is, I think, is a really interesting idea, a new way of – we have lots of indexes for the gross national product.
Right.
The idea of a civic health index to see how are we volunteering, how are we engaging, how are we feeling about our community and our country. I think those ideas are really important to the 21st century.
Mark left a note here from Ben in South St. Paul, who is 24 years old. He says, when words like patriotic and sacrifice become used to describe governmental programs other than the armed forces – I'll sign up. So he wants to hear the rhetoric change on this.
You know, what he's calling for there, it seems to me to be vital, which is a change in culture. It is true that calling for tax increases has now become toxic, and it's so ironic. Tax rates for the wealthiest used to be very within my lifetime. We're at 90% instead of the top rate was at 90% instead of the whatever it is 33% that we have now. The idea that providing taxes is not patriotic, that avoiding taxes does not make you unpatriotic, and is I think, a change in culture that we desperately need to change, because right now one of our challenges and perhaps one of the causes of our economic crisis is that we've got a distribution of income in this country that is that has so widened between rich and poor that it's made a lot of Americans feel that this is hardly our country anymore. Other people are running it. Other people are making the choices. And if we can have a culture in which we're feeling that when we pay taxes, we're actually having a voice, and when we're engaged in service, we're actually having a voice, that, I think, is the kind of change that our political system desperately needs.
No, that's interesting. And Michael Brown, I think I heard you saying you get involved in this kind of service and you do feel like you've regained some control over where the country's headed, over the direction of the country, yes?
Exactly, and it makes you a more educated citizen with regards to where these investments are needed and what's working and what's not, which actually shortens the time between problems and solutions in a society. The other thing, the idea that calling on America's youth to serve in our military to meet incredibly important national objectives, and at the same time calling on America's youth to also serve domestically to tackle some of our greatest domestic challenges.
Right.
And the two really, you know, need to go hand in hand. Of course, more benefits need to be provided for the sacrifice of going into the military where lives are put on the line. But the same frame is also important. For example, here in the States, recent studies by Johns Hopkins University have shown there's a high school dropout crisis, that over a million kids drop out of high school every year.
That's unreal.
One every 26 seconds.
Wow.
But the same study also showed that if you intervene in the lives of somebody as early as the sixth grade and to make sure that they're staying on track with regards to their attendance, their behavior, and their course, passing math or English, you can dramatically change the trajectory of their education. And you can only do that by sending caring adults into schools to work alongside teachers. And that's why we were really excited that President-elect Obama has strongly endorsed, as part of the growth of AmeriCorps, a new education corps to call on America's young people, especially, to go into high-poverty schools and to help make this kind of a difference.
Michael Brown, Mark Leffer with us this morning as we talk about this developing concept of sacrifice that President-elect Obama had been talking about on the campaign trail. Now he's bringing more details to it, and we're talking about what shape that might take across the country and in your own individual lives. 800-242-2828 to join the discussion. 651-227-6000. And if you're getting a busy signal on the phones, although we've got some lines opening up here, MinnesotaPublicRadio.org, and click on Send a Question to the newsroom in Perry Finelli. Hi, Perry.
Harry, consumer prices plunged twice as much as expected last month. That's a record 1%. New home construction, meanwhile, is down 4.5% to its lowest level on government records. On Wall Street, stocks are moderately lower in early trade. There is another bleak assessment of the U.S. auto industry by a top member of Congress. Alabama Senator Richard Shelby told CBS this morning the best course for the Big Three is some type of Chapter 11 bankruptcy. The number two man in Al-Qaeda has issued his first response to the election of Barack Obama as U.S. president. The audio message from Ayman al-Zawahiri appears aimed at persuading Muslims and Arabs that Obama does not represent a change in U.S. policies. He adds that Obama's plan to shift troops to Afghanistan is doomed to failure because Afghans will resist. Obama has reportedly informally offered the job of Attorney General to Eric Holder, who is a former Deputy Attorney General. Holder is said to have accepted if he passes the background check and gets confirmed. He would become the first black to head the department. People close to the selection process for Obama's cabinet say former President Bill Clinton has offered concessions to help Hillary Clinton become Secretary of State. Some of those concessions are said to involve his charitable foundation. The head of the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency is stepping down December 1st. Brad Moore is taking a job in the private sector. Moore has worked for the government for more than two decades. He became a commissioner of the MPCA about 2 years ago after serving a brief stint as acting commissioner. DNR staff are cutting down a 60-foot balsam fir this morning in the Nemadji State Forest near Sandstone. It'll be the next holiday tree at the governor's residence in St. Paul. The tree will be set up on November 24th. Mostly cloudy skies for northern Minnesota today with some flurries. Increasing clouds in central and southern Minnesota with a chance for some flurries. Highs mid-20s to near 40. Right now in the Twin Cities, the temperature is 31 and the skies are cloudy. It's 9:37. This is Minnesota Public Radio News.
Hello, it's Garrison Keillor. You know, tickets for A Prairie Home Companion's fall run at the Fitzgerald are on sale now. And we're adding some Friday night shows. Same stuff as on Saturday with Tim and Tom and Sue and the Shoe Band and musical guests and the news from Lake Wobegon, Guy Noir, all the rest. But without the clock running. For more information on schedules and dates, you can visit us at prairiehome.org or at ticketmaster.com. See you this fall at the Fitz.
Today's programming is supported by the Nature Conservancy, celebrating 50 years of preserving the beauty of Minnesota for people and nature. More about their efforts to conserve forests, lakes, rivers, and prairies online at nature.org/Minnesota.
Support for this program comes from the Women's Foundation of Minnesota, a community foundation growing equality for women and girls through philanthropy, grant-making, research, and advocacy. When women and girls move forward, the world moves with them. WFMN.org.
We're back on Mid-Morning on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Carrie Miller. If you don't have your ticket yet for our Talking Volumes event on Thursday night, you'd best hurry. We are very, very close to being sold out. I heard that this morning. Wally Lamb at the Fitzgerald Theater at 7 o'clock on Thursday night. This is going to be a terrific conversation. I mean, probably one that I've anticipated for months, because we got word that Wally Lamb had finally completed his third novel. It had taken him 9 years, and we booked him even before we'd seen the book. The book is a great read. It's called The Hour I First Believed. He's got so many interesting things going on in his life. He teaches writing at a women's prison. He's filled this new novel with themes of Katrina and Columbine, and actually some of what we're talking about this morning, this idea of sacrifice and the common good. So it ought to be a great conversation. 7 o'clock Thursday night at the Fitz with Wally Lamb. And if you'd like to be in the audience, I'd love to see you there, but you have to hurry to get your ticket. We are close to sold out. And more details about our Talking Volumes schedule for the rest of the season. Boy, we have some great authors. You can find them on the mid-morning book page at minnesotapublicradio.org. All right, back to our conversation this hour. Michael Brown is with us, CEO of City Year, with us from Boston. And Mark Leff is with us, an associate professor of history at the University of Illinois, and with us from Urbana. Gentlemen, I'm going right back to the phones because we still have a lot of people hanging on here. To Jim in St. Paul. And Jim, thanks for waiting. What do you want to tell us?
Well, first of all, Carrie, thanks. This is a great conversation and a great topic. About 10 years ago, I had the opportunity to work with Michael Brown at City Year and got to witness firsthand the power of national service. And I think what I wanted to say is that, you know, service is about sacrifice, but it's also really about getting things done to solve American problems. And so I returned to Minnesota and founded an AmeriCorps organization called Admission Possible, which helps low-income high school students get prepared for college. And I think, you know, the point I want to make is that I think while this is a virtuous thing and it's a part of the American ethic to give something back to your country, I really think that national service is the way that we're going to be able to address a lot of pressing problems that face us, whether it's getting little kids to be able to read at the appropriate age, or like Michael was saying, getting kids to stay in high school and graduate, or whether it's getting kids to go to college, or helping deal with environmental problems. So it's not just a virtuous thing for us to think about, but a way to really get things done to solve important problems in America.
Jim, it's a good point. And tell me again the branch of AmeriCorps that you founded.
We're called Admission Possible, and we help low-income high school students here in the Twin Cities and now in Milwaukee prepare for college.
I'm so glad you called. We appreciate the thoughts.
Jim, it's great to hear you.
Michael Brown, I think a very good point, this idea that it isn't enough to feel virtuous about that. You really have to be able to look back and say we accomplished something. What we do matters beyond the pat on the back for doing good work, right?
Exactly. And, you know, this generation, the millennial generation, is really focused on results. And it ties nicely to what we actually need to do in government. And so tying service to metrics is absolutely key. And the other thing, as so great that Jim joined the call at Admission Possible, such a great organization. One thing we haven't talked about is one thing that comes out of a service experience is entrepreneurship. Hmm. Just like in the private sector, you would go into a certain industry and then you kind of get a better idea and you start a new company. The same thing happens in the world of public service. And the concept of social entrepreneurship, I think, is really key and is actually also a big part of President-elect Obama's plans to basically say, serve for a while, and as you get ideas of what really works, you go off like Jim and create an organization called Admission Possible to actually help kids get into school. Or you may have another way of solving a problem, and it's all based on getting things done. It's all based on metrics. And the idea here is that over time, government could become a partner in these new organizations, not a complete owner, and funding them as they begin to show results.
Michael, I know we have to let you go. I'm just curious about, under the plan that President-elect Obama has proposed, how large would City Year potentially grow? I mean, how many more people do you want to bring in with more funding?
Well, the call for AmeriCorps is to go up significantly threefold. Our own strategic plan is to trying to double the size of our corps.
Okay.
We've received requests from the Chancellor of Education in New York and in Washington, D.C. and in other places to dramatically grow what we're doing in the schools with regards to addressing the high school dropout crisis, as well as here in Boston, our hometown.
And your website to find out more?
It's www.cityyear.org.
Okay, simple enough. And we'll link it to our mid-morning page. Michael, always good to talk with you. Thank you so much for being
with
us.
Thank you, Carrie, and thank you, Mark. And my best to Allison. Thank you for encouraging her to serve at City Year.
Mark, just some thoughts before we go back to the phones here about what Michael Brown was saying in this piece of making sure you're actually getting some things done beyond just the virtuosity of doing it.
Yeah, I think that's one of the, again, accomplishments of the Obama campaign, maybe this sense that you actually can make a difference. And City Year is a good example of a program where you can feel at the end of it that you've made a difference. There was another point that Michael made that I think is when he talked about broadening entrepreneurship.
Right.
I think the whole broadening of a number of concepts, including patriotism, is also what we're talking about. You know, there's the narrow kind of patriotism, which means only the only thing that you really do for the country, and it's sacred and it's vital, is serve in the military. And therefore, for example, in the Iraq War, and this is our first war that didn't have a tax increase, mm-hmm. in which the people who were sacrificing, there were people and families who were sacrificing, often terribly and often and again admirably. That was the soldiers. It wasn't like World War II when the rest of us were, participating in scrap drives or growing victory gardens or according with wage and price controls. This is a time that the so-called greatest generation from that period thinks about most fondly. And one of the reasons that they think about it fondly is that was a time that they participated in what was a sacred cause in which they felt they made a difference. That's crucial.
You know, just one note here, Mark, before we go back to the phones. One of the things that Michael talks about with his organization is this sense that it is a completion of the civil rights movement, what City Year, AmeriCorps, some of these other organizations are doing. And
yep.
when I read that again, I thought, I wonder if that may be what's missing here. There isn't some big sweeping movement at the moment that has a lot of urgency around it that maybe people think it's now or never, I want to get in on this. Is that part of, do you think, what might be missing here and why people have hung back a bit on this?
You know, one of the things that my students often say to me is that there is a kind of nostalgia for the period when there was a central movement and a central figure like Martin Luther King that you could identify with. What I say to them is that movements are things, they're not just there, they're things that you help to create. And I really do have a sense now, and this may be way too optimistic, but that people are in the process of creating a movement, a push for change that's going to be very important. And by the way, if the Obama administration is going to make a difference, it's not just people supporting it or opposing it that matters. It's the kinds of, and it's not just their service individually. Mm-hmm. It's the kinds of pressures that they put on it for change, for environmental reform, whatever it is. And yeah, I do hope that maybe this sense that something is happening that's different from the last 8 years, that will help create the movements or help encourage people to get involved in
it. Let me go back to the phones here to Brianna in Brooklyn Park. Brianna, you're 24?
Yes, I am.
And what did you want to tell us about this?
I just wanted to say that, you know, I've been waiting for a leader for so very long that has energized my generation. I feel like we've been so helpless for so long. We don't feel like we can do anything, and that Obama has energized my generation. And basically, we've been waiting for somebody to tell us what to do. We want to do something, but we haven't known what we can do.
So how are you thinking about this now, Brianna? I mean, I don't get the impression that the president-elect is going to come out and say, sign up for this. I think there's going to be a call, but then it's going to be up to individuals to say, all right, where do I fit?
I agree with that completely. I think it's, you know, it starts at a community level. I think it starts, you know, making changes in your own neighborhood, looking around to what the immediate needs are, because you can't change the world, but you can make small changes in little ways, and basically kind of finding the little ways in your community that you can help out, and you know make the changes that you can make.
So there's some volunteering in your future, Brianna. Is that what I'm hearing here?
I'm yes. Yes, this has energized me very much so.
Good to have your call. I really appreciate it. Mark left. That goes right back to what you were talking about when you have conversations about this with your students.
Right. Right, it really does. This energizing effect is important. Again, it's not that my students have, so many have been involved with some form of volunteer activity, and I think it's a wonderful change in the culture, but the difference is exactly what Brianna was talking about, that you could still feel helpless, that you couldn't really make a difference except on a one-on-one basis. And maybe what people are learning now is that you can go beyond that. You know, when I talk to people from the New Deal, I'm a historian, so I've and when I talk to people from the New Deal, one of the things they said to me, one guy said to me was, you today cannot appreciate what it was like when there was the change when Franklin Roosevelt moved into the presidency. Your histories don't get it. It's like they should have been written on different color paper, he said. Hmm. So he's really talking about a change of mindset that can be energizing. And so what Brianna says makes perfect sense to me.
You know, when I hear you talk about this idea that perhaps has been somewhat pervasive of, you know, I'm an individual. Yes, I can make a change on a one-to-one basis here. But what may be different here is even though that will always be true, there will be this sense that I'm not alone and there are more and more people doing this. And it's this shared purpose, right? So,
absolutely.
So you're not just an individual here, but you're doing what a lot of other people are doing. And that's
right.
Where you see it.
No,
change.
I agree.
Online here from Laura in Woodbury. This is the other side of this from Brianna. She says, let's tap into the brilliant resources of our retired citizens. A tax incentive for our retirees to increase their volunteerism, a huge benefit for all. How about more people like our listener, Adam, who said he went into the Peace Corps at 77? I think that sounds like a great idea.
Not only does it sound like a great idea, but it's something that that President-elect has been talking about. One of the things that he said he wanted to encourage was volunteerism by retirees and going into schools and, you know, working as teacher's aides. I actually think that's part of his program.
And Mark, online here from Jim and Marina in St. Croix says, has the time arrived for a universal service period of up to 2 years with the individuals given the choice of military, social service, et cetera? We have talked about that idea of mandatory service. It's probably not something that could pass here in this country, is it?
And I would have loved to hear what Michael had to say about this one. I haven't thought it through as well as he has. But it sounded to me like he's concerned about somebody who would get involved in service because they had to.
Right.
That part of the point of this is actually a feeling that I want to make a difference beyond myself. And that to me is the danger of any kind of draft. It might then become seen as a burden and not as, you know, this kind of positive, energizing influence that we've been talking about.
To the phones to Rachel in Canton, South Dakota. Rachel, I appreciate you waiting. Thanks very much for joining the discussion. What do you want to add?
Thank you so much. Well, having waited a long time, there's lots, but I want to start with, I'm 48, so I guess I don't fit in young or old. I'm in the middle.
Listen, to me, it's young. Okay.
I don't know. I aged in the last year. I've worked and I've been in public service, primarily in public health, giving to disadvantaged children, but not only that, I started at 7 years old in 1967 at one of the first Head Starts, back when they would allow children to volunteer.
Wow.
And so I've been doing this all of my life. I sadly had a personal trauma in the last year and found myself out of work for the first time since I was 10 years old. And I'm a single mom with three young girls. And one of the things, though, that I was able to do in this time is to get my children involved, to invite them to be involved in the Obama campaign. I took my two youngest girls, went to hear Hillary Clinton speak when she came to Sioux Falls, and went to hear Barack Obama. We are actually coastal people. We've only been in the Midwest for 2 years. And they, my nine-year-old, who is an activist in the making, was so inspired by Barack Obama's speech that she was very active. But one of the wonderful things I got to let them know, they canvassed with me in Sioux City, Iowa, in a very economically diverse, not economically, I should say culturally diverse and economically under, disadvantaged neighborhood, where we walked for 5 hours up and down hills and talked to people and canvassed, and they were part of that. And when they watched the results happening in Iowa, how exciting that was for them. And so to instill in your children without forcing, you know, working in public health, I would have many high school children that had to do service hours and their parents would bring them. And I was in L.A. in the basin of this very affluent Palos Verdes Hills. And these kids came in, and it wasn't because they wanted to, but because they had to. Mm. And I think starting in the younger years is really important. My youngest daughter was at the Million Mom March with me when she was just a year and a half. And we have pictures. So that, I think, is incredibly important. And now that we, for the first time, find ourselves with just the four of us in the house and not having an income, I've been talking with the girls about what next. And, you know, I have a very strong hope and goal of helping youth on the South Dakota reservations. And I know that there's step by step with that because I need to gain trust. Fortunately, when I lived in Utah, I worked with many of our nation's first people from the Southwestern Indians and Northwestern Indians. So,
Rachel, you are talking to your girls about not just about activism, but about sacrifices, sounds like.
Absolutely. But I, you know, for me, it never was sacrifice, because it was what we were meant to do. And it goes back to, you know, that very first caller who made his kind of flippant comment about spending $500 million on your campaign. But I think people, many of those people who make those comments, don't realize that over 90% of that money came from people like myself who don't have an income, who gave less than $100. That is what the people of that campaign, that's where that money came from.
Rachel, I'm a little tight on time, and I want to give Mark a chance
to share some thoughts
on this.
All I wanted to say here was that I have a warning for you, Rachel. This, you may be creating a monster. I mean, you know, I found that with my daughter, who eventually went into AmeriCorps and City Year, that she can keep me honest. That the kinds of commitments that they develop as kids will continue through a lifetime. And she sometimes reminds me of when I'm not doing enough. And the other thing that really impressed me with what you were talking about is as you and your kids went around in broader areas, that's part of what being an American is too, of not just dealing with your own narrow community, but getting a sense of the people around you and wanting to be involved with that.
Very quickly, my 12-year-old, we live in a small town now, and we love our small town, but when it came to coming going to middle school, she said, "Mom, I'm in school with 62 kids in my class, and it'll be the same 62 kids who all look the same for the next 6 years. So I want to go to school in the city where I can see other people."
Rachel, I have to go, and I thank you very much for waiting. It was good to have your comments.
Oh, yes,
please
involve your children. Thanks.
Mark, and I thank you very much for the hour. This has been an interesting conversation. I hope you'll come back and talk to us again when we see exactly what this national service program is going to look like.
Sounds great.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Mark Leffen, Associate Professor of History at the University of Illinois, and was with us from Urbana. Earlier in the hour, we had Michael Brown, CEO of City Year. I know we were getting calls from some listeners who wanted to put the word out for volunteers for some of these organizations. We'll have some links to AmeriCorps and City Year and some of the other organizations on our website on the mid-morning page. You can find that at minnesotapublicradio.org. While you're looking around on the mid-morning page, and if I may say, there is a lot to see, look on the right-hand side. You'll see a link for What Carrie's Reading. That's going to take you to our book page. Lots to see there. You'll see Julie Schumacher's book. is coming up next week. She's written a young adult novel about depression. That's just absolutely terrific. I finished it last week, and I'm looking forward to the conversation. You'll also see Talking Volumes' Wally Lamb on Thursday night at 7. We are close to being sold out. Get your tickets if you want to be there. This is Mid-Morning.
Today's programming is supported by Travelers, leader of the Travelers Education Access Initiative, a collaboration of business, college, and community organizations working together to help make college and career success a reality for low-income first-generation students.